And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. And, oh, by the way, also streaming live online. And, oh, by the way, all you podcasters. I didn't go into the whole thing because I don't want to take up too much time for a segment, but I just got to say, no matter where you get this show, whether it be on radio, whether it be online streaming, whether it be in podcast form, we appreciate you. We know you're out there. You make this all worthwhile. Thank you very much to this audience full of right side ruffians. We love you. Let me go on now and do a segment we do every Thursday. Now, typically this is called Butters and Lee. Butters was just basically somehow escaped town. He's spending time with his daughters, and I cannot argue with that. In fact, I envy that. So, yes, indeed, take that time, Butterman, with your girls. But in the meantime, we're going to bring on two people, one of whom is our usual person in the mix, the diva of punditry from Huntsville. That would be Lee from Huntsville. Are you present right now?
I am.
Yay! We're glad. And then, oh, by the way, also from Huntsville, host of the Controversial Mom podcast, the founder of Moms for Liberty up yonder in the Madison region. That'd be our own Emily Jones. Emily, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, I'm going to pronounce a quorum for what today we're calling Emily and Lee. Hit it. All right, you guys, you know the deal. I ask questions first round, you ask questions second round. Here's my first questions for you. So basically, the wrappers come off, right? The whole Obama manufactured Russia collusion story is we all knew it was fake. It wasn't real, but now we got the receipts. Let me ask you this: do you believe what Tulsi Gabbard's putting out? Do you believe that we're seeing that this was actually manufactured by Obama's team? And then my next question for you, though, is anybody going to jail? In your opinion, your thoughts on that, Emily? Since you're proxying in today, you hang on first and tell us what you think.
I do believe everything she's saying because she's been very careful in her wording. She's just saying, here's what the facts are, as I've seen in the documents, and she's stopping short of saying what she thinks needs to happen next. And she's very detailed in what's happening, very precise. So I definitely think what she's discovered or what she's saying is true, that it actually happened. But no, I don't think anyone's going to go to jail over it. As much as I want them to, I just don't see it ever really happening. I mean, they might get some low-level fish, but that'll be about it. They're not going to arrest Obama or Clinton or any of them, unfortunately. I'd love to see it, though.
It would be something. I mean, well, I tell you what, let me not poison the well. Let me turn to Lee. What do you think, Lee? Is this real? Do you think it's real? And then do you think anybody's going to jail?
Of course it's real. I mean, obviously, we all knew what was going on way back when. We all understood that none of this would be happening unless Obama had greenlit the operation. You're not going to find a piece of paper with him signing, please spy on Trump, sign Barack. But I'm saying, you know, it's obvious that none of this would have been conducted without his oversight and approval. They wouldn't have dared. So, yes, he knew. Yes, he wanted it done. And, yes, this is exposing it. And I think they were afraid of Tulsi exposing it from get-go, which is why they fought so hard for her, against her, to be confirmed. But no one will go to jail because high-level people like that just have built-in protections. They're not going to be willing. Like Emily said, there may be some low-level people, and that's always what happens. Lower-level people take the fall, you know, and everybody's afraid of the Clintons anyway. They don't want to be suicided.
In case I'm not here tomorrow, I do not want to kill myself. That's so I look at this and I agree with you. I think that this is real. I think it's absolutely real. I agree with you. I doubt if somebody's going to go to jail. Although the one that really gets me the most is John Brennan, because John Brennan testified before Congress under oath that he did not rely on the Steele dossier. And now we have memos showing that he was relying on the Steele dossier. So I don't know. I just think that there's still more to come. To me, the big thing is going to be is what's the next release? What's the next tranche of documents? Because she says there's more coming, and she's even saying she's got whistleblowers. I think that's going to be a key too. Emily?
A lot of whistleblowers. She's got like 20 of them.
Oh, I hadn't heard the number. She has 20 of them?
I think, yeah, I saw that earlier today. Don't quote me, but it was exactly 20. But like, it was double digits. It wasn't onesie-twosies. Like, It was a significant amount.
I don't have to quote you. You just said it on the radio.
Those are some brave people. That's all I can say.
Yeah, well, they're automatically, I guarantee you, being given immunity and, you know, and to some degree, probably even protected status. But they also better go ahead and make sure.
Witness protection.
Yeah, and they also better come in and give their sworn testimony right away. You know, you can use somebody's deposition if they are gone. You can bring it back because it was a statement made under oath and recorded. There's more to come on this one. There really is. All right, you guys, let me turn to local politics. I say local. Let me turn to something that's in our sphere. So right now, I think one of the biggest races in our listening area is the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Tommy Tuberville. And, I mean, it's gonna develop even more. But right now, we've got, of course, Attorney General Steve Marshall, former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson. There's somebody else who I'm forgetting right now that's in the race too. And then we're talking about possibility of Congressman Barry Moore. Now, Barry Moore, who represents a big chunk of South Alabama, is a member of the Freedom Caucus. He's a very conservative guy, good dude. And the margins are thin right now in Congress for our majority. So my question for you guys after that long speech is, can we afford to lose him in Congress? And do you think he's going to jump in? Yes or no? You first this time, Lee.
No, we can't afford to lose him in Congress at all. And he doesn't have the name recognition to me to win this statewide race. I just don't think so. I think that Steve Marshall is his to lose. I love Jared, but I just don't think he has enough experience to take on a senator position. I mean, people would have said that about Tommy Tuberville too, but still, I just feel as if it's probably going to be Steve Marshall. And I just don't think Barry Moore has enough going for him to land that. I could be wrong.
Okay. And then as to the margins, you said you don't think we can lose him because of the margins. Is that what you said in Congress,
yes.
The slim margin?
It's critical that we not, yes.
All right. What do you think there, Emily Jones?
I half agree with what Lee said. My biggest concern is losing Barry in the House because we've got a really tight majority. And I mean, Barry's just such a fighter. It's not just having a Republican vote. It's having someone that's willing to disrupt the status quo.
Yeah.
And that is so much of what Barry is. That is my biggest fear in all of it. And there's just not a good replacement for him in South Alabama. If there were a really strong name that could run and backfill him, that would probably put away some of my concerns. But there's just a vacancy there. But I love Barry getting in the race. I love Barry. I actually was texting his wife earlier. We actually grew up like 10 minutes from each other and had no clue.
No kidding.
So, yeah, we had rivaling schools growing up. But I love Barry. I love his wife. I love Jared. So, to me, like, that's just such a tough one is having to pick between Barry or Jared because they're both staunch conservatives, both fighters. I mean, they would both go in and do exactly what Coach has done, which is disrupt everything. But I do think that Barry's name recognition is more in the South. It's not statewide where I think that's where Marshall's kind of got him beat. But they're workers. I mean, I think they're willing to come in and work hard for it. But I think it will be tough to beat Steve Marshall in that race just because I think he's more well-known, especially in North Alabama. And that's really the part that matters the most because that's where the mass population is. So.
Well, so
I love Barry. Just don't know where I land on all of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm really concerned. I mean, I served with Barry. This is a weird deal. This is one of those races where I know and like all of the candidates. I've known Steve Marshall for years. We have a great relationship. I know Jared Hudson very well. He's one of our podcasters at Right Side. He's an incredible guy. And then, of course, I know Barry Moore. We actually served together in the legislature. I'll never forget fighting for legislation together. I mean, I love Barry. I saw him when I was up in D.C. for the inaugurals. And all that to say, it's a deep bench, which is nice. It's nice to have a deep bench, which, you know, you look at and go, okay, I like all of the candidates. But when I look at Barry and think about how slim the margins of majority are for the Republicans in the House, and I know how much he had to fight to get that seat that he's in, and I also know that waiting in the wings is Jerry Carl, who's going to be really Mr. kind of like centrist, tepid, you know, center-right kind of guy and just you know, not be the Barry Moore that we have right now. I hate that idea. So part of me is concerned that he leaves a seat behind to run the risk of losing a seat that we're going to keep no matter what. The statesman-like view for me is I almost kind of hope Barry stays where he is. So that's that. That's a weird position to be in, but there it is. All right, that would be round one already. Good Lord. All right, we're at round one of Emily and Lee. We'll come right back. This is where we flip the script. They ask me questions, and I hope I have an answer. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, using common sense like a superpower. All right, so jumping back in with round two of Emily and Lee. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and go with Lee first. I tell you what, yep, let's do it. Lee first, question for me, what do you got? Did I lose Lee?
I wanted to find out what you thought about the pickle that President Trump has sort of got himself into.
Okay.
As far as the Epstein file, because I find it interesting. The Democrats really weren't screaming for Biden and them to release the files. As a matter of fact, Dick Durbin blocked it a couple of times, I believe. And yet now they suddenly decided this is a weak point for Trump. And so now they're screaming for him to release it. And they're actually coming out and demanding it, even though some of the ones that are demanding it were the ones that blocked it, which I find hysterical.
Yeah.
Also, I think we all understand that if there was anything in there that was even a little bit incriminating, it would have been released about Trump years ago.
Yeah.
So how does he get out of this catch-22? And how does he get them to stop screaming about it without releasing the documents? And do you think they're not releasing them because of the international implications?
Okay, so that's a lot.
I know.
Don't beat around the bush. Ask me one question. All right. Let me see if I can give you a narrative answer on some of that. So the reality is, yes, Democrats, the kabuki theater that we're seeing right now is just literally them having nothing else to work with. And so they're grabbing hold of something to make something out of nothing. And that's where we are. I don't think Trump has himself in a pickle, with the exception that everybody thought there'd be more. And now they're finding out that what they've got in their hands does not really give them more without doing a couple things. One, it would require them to defy court orders, and they can't do that. A lot of this stuff, these so-called names, are bound up in grand jury testimony that is currently under court seal. So Trump called their bluff. I don't know if you saw this or not, but 2 days ago, Trump asked for the director of, for the DOJ to go ahead and petition the court to unseal the records and release the names, if the judge will do it.
Yeah.
But I think everybody knew, including Trump, that that was not likely to happen. And it didn't.
Right.
The judge denied it yesterday. So I would say, first of all, part of what's there can't be released without the judge agreeing to it. Everybody knew that. The Democrats know that. Trump even knew that. But he called their bluff and pretended he didn't know that, and he was trying to get it. And it really, it's political theater. The other piece of this, though, is what they may have in their hands could also be something that could open up just an amazing amount of, yes, there would be international ramifications, I believe. Yes, there would be potentially some damage done to international relations. But the other piece of this is, what does it do to a person's life if you suddenly infer that they were at a pedophile's island when they may never have done anything except be present at a function where Jeffrey Epstein was also present? You know what I'm saying? So you got to be careful with defamation.
Right.
And you got to be careful with suddenly releasing someone and destroying their credibility when they had done nothing to earn it. So I really believe that what's happened is, and I said it multiple times, this is where Dan Bongino said the other day so well. He said, I used to get paid for my opinions. Now I get paid to deal with facts. And that's the conundrum that I think that they're in. Court's under seal. And then some of it's just now the facts aren't what they thought they were. And then some of it is just something that all you'd be doing is destroying a life for nothing more than an inference. And that's just not good governance. So that's where we are right now. I want to see people brought to justice, but I want to know that they were the ones who did it, not the ones who just happened to be at a function. So there. Okay, Emily, what you got for me?
All right, I had to research a new question because you stole mine. just so your audience is aware, still stole my question. So this is my second option.
All right.
I have been seeing lots of headlines about people within the Biden administration that are pleading the fifth when they've been brought in to answer questions around Biden's mental state when he was the president.
Yeah.
There have been talks about offering people a plea deal to come in and testify to what really happened without them being held accountable for not reporting it or whatever. What are your thoughts on offering plea deals to those that are pleading the fifth and avoiding questioning?
So first of all, plea deals are a common, and immunities deals are part of, you know, this, the way the justice system works. If you're trying to get at the big guy and you've got three small guys that could otherwise be in trouble and you've got the goods on them and they will agree to turn state's evidence, then you do that to get to the big guy because the big guy is the real problem. So that's not uncommon. I don't think that's a bad tactic. In fact, the little guys so often are the ones who are the minions are the ones who are going to wind up facing the heat if they don't get some immunity. And then the big guy goes scot-free. So I think that's the way to go on it. Now, with them pleading the fifth, what does this mean? So, yes, they have pled the fifth. And you'd like to think that if there's nothing wrong there, then why did they plead the fifth? Well, that's because there is something that, whether it is actually criminally culpable, cannot be fully determined yet until a trial by jury. But in the interim, why implicate yourself in such a way as to create the need for a trial by jury? So they're pleading the fifth, and that's under advice of counsel, I'm sure. The other piece of this, though, is in the back room, if there's something to work out, that's where you're going to see their lawyer go to the Department of Justice and go, so hypothetically speaking, if my client were to say something along the lines of X and so, would there be a willingness on your part to, I don't know, work a plea deal with them or an immunity deal? So that's what I bet is happening. There was some talk today, by the way, I haven't seen it yet, but one of the Biden senior advisors was actually giving real answers. And I don't know yet to the extent of that, but that was actually happening just today. So anyway, did I answer your question?
I missed that one. It does. I missed that headline, but I saw somebody else that had gone in and pled the fifth, and that's what sparked the whole thing in my mind. So I didn't know that somebody was answering. That's interesting.
What do you think, Lee? You want to chime in on that real quick before we run out of time?
I agree that that we should try to bring in some of these lower level people. I think we need to work on the physician, honestly, more than anything, because he made an oath.
Yep.
And physicians tend to want to do the right thing. That's their core. That's why they're doctors. And I think if you offered him immunity, he would be one of the best people to get the answers from. Politicians will lie like a rug and not care. So
he's going to be interesting, too, because I think he's also subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I believe he was on active duty assigned to the White House as a military surgeon. So that's going to be also interesting because there's a different standard there on some of those things. Well, listen, Emily, you're going to stay around us for a minute so we can talk about an event coming up Monday. But in the meantime, thank you both for who you are and what you do. And we love having you on. And we'll do this again. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be hour number 3 coming up.